Man, this is Deion Dawkins, man. And you're listening to The Scoop on OwlScoop.com. You already know.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to The Scoop, OwlScoop.com's podcast. It's season 9, episode 28. I'm John DiCarlo, the editor of OwlScoop.com. Not quite a full house today, but I am joined by Johnny Zwislak and Declan Landis. Very happy to be talking Temple Sports with these guys. We have a great show ahead for you all, including another interview with Temple linebacker, or former Temple linebacker, I should say, Jordan McGee. We promised that we would try to catch up with him after the NFL scouting combine out in Indianapolis, and he did a really good job out there last week, probably made himself some money. Of course, all that remains to be seen, but was among the top five in several categories in the 40 vertical and did well out there. The only thing he couldn't do was the bench press as he continues to recover from his torn biceps injury. But we have a conversation that I had with him that we'll play for you a little bit later. Of course, updates on the Temple men's and women's basketball teams. And we've got some spring football talk as well, because spring practice is starting next Tuesday. So we'll still be your best spot to come to for Temple football coverage as the Owls find their new identity this spring with more than 40 new players, as we've discussed before. So a lot of cool stuff to get into, along with answers to your mailbag questions. The Scoop, as always, is brought to you all by Greenspan and Greenspan Injury Lawyers. If you've been injured while on the road or the highway and the crash was someone else's fault, the insurance company is not going to be on your side. You need us, Temple law grads, who will fight hard to get the compensation that you deserve. We only get paid if we win. So in Pennsylvania or New York, call us today at 215-261-7359. That's 215-261-7359. And you can find them on the web at greenspans-law.com. That's greenspans-law.com. What's going on, guys? Declan, you are indeed alive after your wisdom teeth surgery. You were a little concerned, especially—
But out of respect for our conversation last week, direct the questions to Johnny first, and then we can speak about my wisdom teeth.
Oh my God. Johnny, that's crazy. Johnny.
I'm sticking up for you.
I appreciate it.
But I'm setting the tone early.
You don't have to direct the question right away. You know?
Now it's awkward. Now you're trying too hard. This is performative. This is performative stuff. You're trying too hard.
Okay.
Johnny into the conversation where it would happen more than organically. Johnny is more than qualified to be on this podcast. He spoke out a little bit last week.
I agree. Hey,
give me a little bit more of a voice. I'm just asking a question about your health. It doesn't mean that I'm not going to talk to Johnny about it.
Look, was it premeditated? Yes, but it comes from a place of sincerity, from the heart. Okay. I want Johnny to feel respected by people on this podcast. And yes, did I have a major surgery? Perhaps. Okay. Some people are calling it that. Does my mouth hurt? Yes. Okay. Irrelevant. I want to hear how Johnny's doing.
I didn't have a surgery or anything, so there's not too much to update on. So I feel like, I feel like maybe leading off with you and how you're doing maybe was the right thing in that scenario. But I appreciate the sentiment, and I appreciate, you sticking up for me. But let's get back to the issue at hand. How are you doing? How's your mouth?
Good. I'm in pain, but less pain than I was. I went in, I told these guys off air, but so I had a consultation last Thursday. By the way, I got my wisdom teeth out. That's what this deal is.
That's the major surgery we're talking about.
It is major. It's a mark in every person's life. Sometimes, so apparently some people can keep them, which I don't know how you get put on that list, but I missed out on that mark, unfortunately. So I went home Thursday. Went to this consultation meeting, and it was really cool. You walk in, the nice lady was like, here, have a seat on this couch. We're going to show you this nice little movie. Here I am thinking we're going to watch like Little Giants or something, like Taiwan Francis's favorite movie. And I look at the screen, and it's like, oh, you're getting your wisdom teeth out. Here's what you need to know. And it was legitimately 15 minutes of, hey, if you die on the table, that's on you, so good luck with that. Which not the best vibes to set in, one day before the surgery. So I went in Friday morning. I was not thrilled. And you know, I'm sitting in the chair, and they put the nice little IV in me, and you know, 1 minute I'm talking and I'm looking at the IV, and the next minute I'm in the middle of the Northern Lights, like, you know, the those things in the sky, like with the, yeah, the beautiful. That's what it was. And the next minute I wake up and they're out. You know, I'm four teeth down and in a lot of pain, but you know, we survived the weekend, lost some blood, lost some sleep, but can't complain.
That was quite poetic. That was you set the scene. That was a good anecdotal lead.
Thank you.
So good stuff there. Johnny, what's your assessment of his story there?
You know, I'm not shocked by Declan. He knows how to tell a story, and he knows how to, you know, get the listener interested. He did a great job, you know, leading off with the, hey, like, I might die. So then I was hooked the rest of the way.
I mean, yeah, that's what it was, like, legit. And I walked in for the consultation, and the doctor was like, hey, you know, this will be pretty easy. And I was like, really? Because then why did you show me that video that said, you know, get your affairs in order here before you go under? And because, he was like, if I didn't have to show you, I wouldn't. But
as Andrew Brandt likes to say on Twitter, there will be lawyers. It's a legal thing. It's a disclosure.
It's an insurance thing.
Yeah. The difference is that you watched a video, whereas when I got mine out in the late 90s, it was like you read a disclosure and you signed it. That's going to be.
Oh, I sign things too.
That's going to be for anything you do in life when you get your first colonoscopy, your first endoscopy, all the fun stuff.
I was going to say, you know, talking about a fun procedure, you know.
I mean, it's the prep, the colonoscopy. It's more the prep. The actual procedure itself, you're out for it. You wake up and, like you said, you're in la la land. So, yeah. But you fought through it. You were nervous heading into it. Somebody, I don't know who, was asking which of your valuable possessions would go to which person in our friend group.
And did you say you don't know who? Like, it wasn't you that asked me that question?
You can't prove that. That's as I recall, you weren't leaving me anything.
No, that's absolutely not true, by the way. But you put me on the spot, first of all, okay? Second of all, you guys called me Thursday night, so right before my impending death at the time, okay? So I wasn't in the best frame of mind. I was trying to listen to some nice, you know, little Fleetwood Mac, little Billy Joel, trying to calm the soul, you know? And you're asking me to dish out things in my will. I just was not prepared to answer that question.
Can I ask you a question?
I guess so.
Do you think you're at all being just a tad dramatic about this?
I am, but I think it's in my right to do that. You know, I think
feel your feelings.
Feel my feelings. Absolutely.
Johnny, have you had your wisdom teeth taken out before?
I have not. So I will take note of how Declan is going about this and do it the exact same way so that I get to be in the spotlight too.
Johnny, if I could change one thing, I wouldn't do it. I'll tell you what, I wouldn't do it. But that's just me being a baby. So you're a lot tougher than I am.
If you wouldn't do it, do you know what happens? The wisdom teeth that are impacted keep pushing on your other teeth and cause damage in your mouth. So you did the
I've
right
always
thing
been a firm dad. Believer that, you know, if dentures were good enough for the founding fathers, they might be good enough for me.
Simply amazing. Bottom line is you're okay. You were always going to be okay.
Wow. It was touch and go, but yes.
Yes. Famous number 28s, gentlemen. What do you have? Declan, were you too thick to study up here?
I, first of all, never study up, okay? And you can't prove otherwise. Second, I've got two off the top of my head right now. Adrian Peterson, Marshall Faulk.
Adrian Peterson, I feel like, has worn several numbers in the 20s. I feel like he's been a part of the last three episodes. I feel like he worked.
He has in some shape or form.
Yeah. Those are two good ones. Johnny, anything?
Alec Bohm.
What a moment for Johnny.
You guys just want to go straight to trivia here?
I love a good trivia. You know that.
I think this is going to be a little challenging for you guys. A lot of guys that aren't really a part of today's generation. We talked about AP, talked about Marshall Faulk, arguably the richest professional athlete walking the face of the earth right now.
Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yes. Very good.
Manchester United, maybe. The early days.
I think so. I don't think you'll get some of these. Sam Newman, former AlScoop.com staff member, now with Awful Announcing, we get this one. Former New York Jet, former New England Patriots running back. I mean, we're talking 95 to 2006 here. I just don't think you guys will get this one.
Yeah, not a chance on that
Curtis
one.
Curtis Martin.
Wow.
Former Jaguars running back who stopped playing in 2010.
Only person I can think of is Maurice Jones-Drew. I just don't think that's correct.
No. MJD was, I think, was basically Fred Taylor's successor. It was Fred Taylor.
Fred. I know Fred Taylor from the Bills, though. I don't think of him as a Jaguars guy.
A Titans, Jets, and Cardinals running back who stopped playing in 2017 was a big fantasy guy.
Say the team one more time.
Did the bulk of his best play with the Titans. Three-time Pro Bowler.
The fantasy thing's throwing me off.
Chris Johnson.
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't have got that. But
yeah, I'm looking at another running back, couple of running backs here. From the Bengals, Corey Dillon, you guys wouldn't get that one. I'm literally just going down the list here. I'm just trying to think of one.
Oh, I think it's coming to me here. Sixers what? Legend Charles Bassey, I believe, is 28 for the Spurs.
Oh, my God. Just a bad week for us with famous number 28s.
Yeah, you know, usually not our strong suit anyway, but yeah, even worse this week.
No, but you were, Beckling, you just needed to get more than anything. You just needed to get your strength back this week. It was, like you said, touch and go for a little while. So,
yeah, recovery.
We'll do better next week. I think we're inching closer and closer to retiring this segment, as Kyle said. I think we need a little something else at the outset of the show. I've got some ideas. We'll talk about it off air.
I know we've talked about it a little bit on a previous episode. I think Around This Date is funny. You know, and then the radius just keeps getting bigger and bigger. Who knows what'll come up? It's unpredictable.
Around the state?
What's that?
Around the state?
Around this date.
Oh, around this date. Oh.
Yes.
I thought around this state. This week in Breezewood.
Yeah, we don't want to dox ourselves here. Who knows who's on the internet? Okay.
This week in Johnstown.
There we go. I don't know.
Have you ever been to Breezewood or Johnstown?
You know me well enough to know that if I had been, I couldn't tell you.
Yeah. On the way to Pittsburgh, not much out there. But we do love all of our listeners in Breezewood and Johnstown. So
good save.
Don't want to alienate them. We promised you guys another interview with former Temple linebacker Jordan McGee. In the top five among all linebackers at the combine, the 40-yard dash time, a 4.55 second 40-yard dash, a 35.5-inch vertical leap, and a broad jump of 10 feet 4 inches. So a good week for Jordan McGee out at the NFL Scouting Combine in Indianapolis. He was kind enough to spend some time with me this week to talk about that, talk about his thoughts on his combine performance and what's next. So we'll have this interview for you here, and as always, have more on the other side. All right, well, we talked to this guy not too long ago, and when he goes out to the NFL Combine and does what he did out there, you want to have him back on the podcast, and that's former Temple linebacker Jordan McGee. Jordan, it's great to talk to you. Before the Combine, and we talked to you last time we talked, you weren't sure about whether or not you were going to be able to participate, and you got the invite, which was awesome. You were looking forward to getting out there. When did you kind of know that you were going to be a go to participate as much as you did?
I'd say maybe about middle of January, because I felt like I was really ahead of schedule talking to the PT guys down at X3 and Fort Myers. And then I went back to Philly on the 29th to get a checkup, and the doc cleared me. So I knew that it was a go after that. And everything felt fine in the past like weeks and stuff leading up to the combine. So I'm like, I might as well do it just to get out there in front of all those GMs and scouts and stuff like that.
What was that feeling like when you got the go ahead and they're telling you, hey, you can go ahead and participate? Real quick though, I think the only thing you couldn't do was the bench press, right?
Yeah, the bench. Yep.
Yeah, but everything else. When you got the go ahead, what was that feeling like? Had to be exciting, I'm sure.
Oh yeah, of course. It was most definitely exciting. You know, I wasn't able to compete in the Senior Bowl or any of the All-Star games. So just being able to showcase my athletic ability and what I can do in the interview setting just was a blessing in itself, you know, just being able to get back out there so quick.
And then you ranked in the top five in the 40-yard dash time of the 4.55 40 vertical jump. You did a 35.5 inches and the broad jump was 10 feet 4 inches. Top five among linebackers. I'm assuming you got to be pretty happy with your performance.
Oh yeah, I'm really happy with the performance. You know, I was aiming for 4.4, maybe high 4.4s in the 40, but 5.5 is still good because a lot of people had me running in the sixes. So just for me to be able to run in the fives is a blessing. And 10.4 was one of my personal best. You know, when I was training down in Fort Myers, 10.3 was my best, and then I PR'd by an inch out at the combine. And my vert, I feel like I could do a little better on vert, but it is what it is.
What's it like, Jordan, to be under a microscope like that out there? Obviously, on paper, you responded to the pressure. Those are good numbers, but take us inside what it's like when you're out there. You walk into that stadium. This is something that, you know, fans love watching this stuff, and I'm assuming that maybe you watched it too growing up. You walk in there, Lucas Oil Stadium. What's it like when it's go time?
It was crazy, you know. Just looking at like the banners in there, you know, it's a dome and it's bright lights in there. So, you know, you got to step up to the occasion and, you know, you just got to be comfortable at the end of the day. You know, I've been playing football my whole life. I got here for a reason. I'm here for a reason. So you just have to carry it like that and into the drills, you know. It was great being out there with athletes of that caliber and that talent, you know, being able to be looked upon as one of those top guys in the country. And just getting out there to compete is just a blessing.
And I don't know how much you pay attention to this stuff, but beforehand, you know, if you follow stuff on social media, like people like Daniel Jeremiah and other guys that look at a lot of film, I think it was even before you performed, your name was starting to get some buzz and people were saying stuff like, what am I missing here? Like, why aren't more people talking about Jordan McGee? Before you went through the 40 and, you know, and invert and the broad jump and everything, did you see stuff like that? And if so, does that make you feel good? Or are you kind of like, oh man, now there's a little bit more pressure associated with it? Or is it good to see that stuff out there?
I mean, yeah, it's good to see that type of stuff because, you know, people's watching, you know, people watching like your moves and everything you do. So it's just good to be able to get that recognition, you know, coming from a small school like Temple, you know, compared to all the other guys that went to P5s and things like that.
What's it like just before you're about to take off for the 40? What's going through your mind? Like you said, you've trained for this, and I'm sure that they prepare you for stuff like this. What's going through your mind? Are you just so locked in where you've rehearsed it, or is there still a little bit of like this rush of wow?
Nah, I think I got all the wow out of me when I first got there, like literally first got there. After I did a couple of interviews, I'm like, okay, I'm really doing it now. But the field part is easy. You know, I've been doing things like that my whole life, you know, running 40s and jumping and doing broad jumps and stuff like that. So that came natural. But as far as like when I was on the line, you know, they called my name up on the microphone. It's quiet in there. So like you can hear a pin drop in there. I'd say like I got down on the line, you know, with my strength coach down at X3, he's like, just visualize what you want to run and that's what you go to run. So I looked down the line, I looked at when I looked at the 40, look at the finish line, visualized the 4.4, ended up running 4.5, but that's still good. Ended up visualizing it, looking down the line, you know, I got down on my stance and I had to hold it for a 3 count. And after that, it was up. I took off.
When you land there, what's it like? I mean, if you had to take us through just the couple of days that you spent out there, what's the schedule like?
Okay, so the first day, I got there on Monday or Sunday. Oh, I forgot what day it was. I think I got there on Monday in the morning time. As soon as I got off the plane, met with a couple of scouts. You know, they go walked us through the airport down to like the bus, the little charter that they had that takes you from the airport to the actual like the facilities and all that stuff. So when I was getting off the airport, you know, they was telling us, I guess, like a couple guys lined up downstairs that want to get autographs. And they was just telling us like, you can sign if you want to, you don't have to sign, or you can sign it. And then this guy ended up signing like two or three autographs. Then they took us to Lucas Oil, walked around in there for a little bit, take pictures, all that. Then we got down to business, you know, had dinner, had orientation. Later in the day, had formals and informal interviews. So those were about 4 hours. So we had formal interviews for maybe like an hour, hour and a half, and then informal for the rest of the time. Then the next day is when like the medical stuff started. So we had to get EKGs, chest x-ray, you know, urine samples, blood drawn. You know, they invest millions of dollars into you, so they want to find everything out about you that they can. They want to see if anything's wrong with you. So we did a lot of medical stuff. You know, I had torn biceps, so a lot of teams requested like MRIs and x-rays on my bicep, different things like that. So majority of day two and three was a lot of like x-rays and medical stuff. And we had orientation on the third day again. So we had a couple of like NFL legends come and talk to us. This is about their experience and like what they want us to get out of this this experience. Then I'd say,
who did you hear from? Who talked to you?
It was I honestly forgot his name, but he was a player. I talked to Chris Carter for a little bit, mm-hmm. and I talked to Thomas Davis for a little bit.
Okay.
So I talked to those two guys the day of when I was about to run. I talked to Thomas Davis. He gave some good insight of like just don't worry about the time, you know, just get out there and run and you'll find out the time after. But other than that, I'd say on Wednesday, you know, we got fitted for like Madden, like they scanned our bodies for Madden. Like that was a cool experience. Thursday is when we got our measurements in the morning. So we get measured and stuff like that, you know, weigh in. Ended up having like a little break in between, maybe like 3 hours in between, eat real quick before you go out there. And when you go out there, you like you're in the stadium, you're watching like the D-line finish up, then you start doing stuff, stretching and things like that, you know, doing little things like let me see. So after we was done stretching like in the line, we moved on to a flexibility test. So they took us through like five tests, just to test your flexibility. Ended up passing all those, you know. Then you move on to the vert, then moved on to the broad jump, and then started to warm up for the 40s. They called us up, you know, they're telling us like what you can do and what you can do with the 40. Ended up running the 40. I felt like I had a good time, so got to position work, stretched a little bit before position work, and then got right into position work. And then at the end, they asked us if we want to do like short shuttles and stuff like that. A couple guys did it, but everybody's legs is really dead, so I didn't get to do the short shuttles. But it was a great experience overall, you know. And then on Friday, we had to wake up early for a drug test, and then that was it.
Is there like a sense of relief when it's all over? I'm imagining, like you said, it's like trusting your processes, your instinct. I would imagine there's a little bit of adrenaline when it's all over. Is there like a sense of relief where you're like, okay, I did it?
Yeah, most definitely. Like a deep breath, like I really did it. Like it's been a long 5 days, I tell you that, most definitely. Like, but it's definitely a great experience, and you know, definitely once in a lifetime opportunity.
We were texting about this a little bit last night, and a lot of people always want to know if you get weird interview questions, and you were telling me that, I mean, it sounds like it was a lengthy process, but you were saying to me, yeah, I didn't really get anything too off the wall. But what was it like when teams are talking to you and you're just even just talking to someone for that long? And I've never been through that. But take listeners through what that's like when you're doing the team interviews. What's it like? And what are some of the questions that you get?
So I had a formal with Dallas. That was my only formal. Ended up having a formal with them. But they just want to know, like, are you a knucklehead off the field, things like that. They want to know how you were raised, what you like to do outside of football. They ask you a couple questions about teammates and stuff like that. And then with the formals, you get in the film. So I was in there with the linebackers coach. You know, Coach McCarthy was on Zoom. Special teams coordinator was on Zoom. So I was in a room with them, and then ended up putting up, like, six plays, two bad plays, four good plays. They just want to test your retention skills, how well you retain information. Can you remember what you ran in college a couple months ago? Like simple things like that, you know. They want to know, for a linebacker, were you communicating in the front right here? Or do the safeties control it? Or, like, how do you get the signal in? Like, do they signal from the sideline? Or do you have, like, a play caller? Different things like that. They just want to understand and want to know, like, do you really understand football? Like, how high is your football IQ?
Is that the more exhausting part? Because, again, I mean, we've talked about this. You're a smart guy. You know the game But when you're being picked apart like that and you're on Zoom too, and it's like the stuff that you see on TV, diagnose this, what'd you do here? What went wrong there? Did you hit the right gap? Is that almost a little bit more exhausting than the 40?
I'd say, you know, when I was going into the informals, like I've never done like those type of interviews and stuff because I didn't go to the Senior Bowl or the R-Stars. So I didn't know what to expect. So I wasn't nervous, but I was like, dang, like what they about to ask me, what they about to ask me. But I cracked it off with a couple informals. So I got a gauge of like what it is, what they wanted to know and things like that. And at the end of the day, it's just talking, you know, being yourself, you know, being truthful and honest, you know, and that's the type of person I am. So that came easy to me. So I had a couple of informals before the actual formal. And the formal wasn't bad. It went good. You know, they said that was one of the top formals they had. And then I had a couple more informals after the formal. But other than that, I felt like I did a great job. And it wasn't really exhausting. I'd say that part came easy to me because I love football. Like it's I wake up and eat football. Like that part's easy to me. I'd say the most like demanding part was like the medical stuff, just being able to sit, like sitting in a medical room for maybe 5 hours waiting to get an MRI. You know, that was tough. You know, I missed dinner both days in a row. So it was just little things like that. You know, the football stuff was the easy part.
Is that kind of nerve-wracking too? Because I would imagine you have a strict regimen that you want to stick to, especially when you're going to be doing all this stuff. Like you want to eat as well as you can. And when you miss dinner like that, what do you do? How do you adjust?
When I missed dinner, I ended up like, so they had like a snack bar, a big snack bar you could get. So usually I was going to sleep around. Our day didn't end until like 11:30 at night. And that's if you had to work out after that, like get a workout in, they had like a training area, Noble training area. So like one day I didn't get back into the crib till like 1 o'clock in the morning after my workout. So I would grab a lot of like snacks, like little things like Gatorade protein bars and like drinks and like chips and stuff like that, and just take it back to the room and just eat that before I went to sleep, just to have a little bit of calories in my system.
What kind of feedback did you get on your game out there? What do people like? What do people see as a concern for you? I feel like the only knock that I've seen sometimes when you read like these scouting reports, whatever they're worth, the only knock I really see on you is like, okay, he's 6'1". He's not as tall as we'd like him to be. And you can't be any taller than you are, but that's not terrible size for a linebacker. I feel like that's maybe the only thing that people see as a slight detriment, but like it seems like a lot of the feedback was positive. What kind of feedback did you get on your game when you started talking, you know, nitty gritty stuff with people?
A lot of feedback I got was like definitely fast. Like every scout thought I was fast. You know, they was very interested to see what I ran. I'd say the main thing for me was they wanted to see how I move and like position work. So after I got done doing position work, a lot of like scouts came up to me and was like, hey, you really had a solid performance. You know, I like everything you did, and we're going to be in touch. So I feel like that was like one of the main things, a lot of feedback that I got. I'd say like they look at me as like a sideline, type of guy, a run and hit type of linebacker. Some scouts say I could work on like pass coverage and like pass drops and stuff like that. But that's a part of the game too. Like you're never going to stop learning. You can always get better at something.
Yeah,
so that's what I would say about that whole deal.
Do you have any like just favorite conversations that you had out there, or maybe just fellow players that you met or coaches, or any like just conversation was where you were like, wow, this is cool. I'm like rubbing elbows with this guy.
Yeah, just like the guys that I was in there with, you know, I'm in there with guys like Dallas Turner. He a top 10 pick. And you would think he would be like a different type of like guy, Hollywood, but he was down to earth. You know, he's a cool guy. I chatted up with him for a little bit. Guys like Jeremiah Trotter, I talked to him a little bit. I didn't talk to him that much, but I talked to him maybe a little bit. You know, just getting out there with those type of guys and being able to compete, you know, see each other in a competitive atmosphere. You know, it is what it's about.
Will you participate in Pro Day at Temple, or are you kind of good with? What's your best course of action? Will you run the 40 again, or are you kind of good on your 40 time? Will you do stuff at Pro Day, or are you kind of just like letting the combine speak for itself?
So I'm in conversations with my agent. We're still talking about that. Everything that I've heard, you know, it sounds like I really don't have to do a Pro Day because I've shown my athletic ability in front of in front of GMs and scouts and different guys, all the top guys, you know, I'd say there's a possibility I could do pro day, but right now it's looking like I probably won't do pro day. I don't know yet. We'll see. But other than that, you know, it's just a lot of like meetings with teams, you know, college scouting directors on Zoom. Like I had a couple, I had Houston today. I was talking to Houston today. I have a 30 visit coming up with the Cowboys. I'm not sure if I have a 30 visit with the Eagles. I still have to talk to my agent. But that's the plan for right now.
What's next for you? Like, what do you work on? Is it just some of the same stuff or anything in particular?
Yeah, same stuff, you know, more position-based now since I probably won't be doing, like, all the drills at Combine, more position-based, you know, getting in shape for rookie minicamp and slight workouts and things like that.
And is it still, I know this is, like, the meaningless question to ask, did any of the feedback change? I know the draft is the draft. You could go third round, you go in the fourth round, you go in the seventh round. You know, nobody is going to know until it gets here, but... Yeah. Do you feel like, I mean, it looks like you helped yourself. Did you hear any sort of different feedback after the times and the, you know, the numbers that you posted?
Yeah. So I'd say, about that, a lot of teams before I worked out, a lot of teams had me in like those later rounds, like the sixth, seventh round or to like undrafted, but now not undrafted, but now they're saying like, like an early day three, maybe day two, like a late day two pick. Like I know the Cowboys had me slotted at like they don't see me making it out the 10th pick of the fourth round. So if they have a pick, if they have a pick around that time, hey, never know. But I know a lot of teams have me in like that early day three time now, like round four, around that range.
When you and I have talked about this, you really do seem to take everything in stride pretty much. And you've talked a lot about the advice you've gotten is like, hey, I have to stop and enjoy this because I've earned this. And it seems like you're still in that headspace. It just seems like you're really enjoying this. It doesn't seem like you're getting too high or too low about it. Is that still the case? Or is there another level of it now where like biggest stage I could be on, I went out there and did really well. And now it's really starting to get serious. Is there another level to it? Or are you kind of just feeling like, okay, this is where I am. It seems like you're pretty calm and collected about it.
Yeah, nah, that's how I approach everything. I'm a cool, collective guy. So I like to just live in the moment. You know, I can't think about what's to come. I have to live in the moment and be where my feet are.
Any good advice from any like the former Temple guys, like a Tyler or Sean Bradley, or anything since? Because again, it was cool to see you get the positive feedback and coverage that you got. You went out there and did well. Did you hear from anybody after the combine with any good advice or just anybody reaching out to congratulate you?
Yeah. A lot of Temple alumni, you know, Sean, Chappelle, Sam, guys like that, you know, they reached out saying, Sean was telling me he was faster than me still, but because he ran a faster time. But other than that, you know, guys was reaching out to me like they're proud of me, you know, little things like that, you know, Temple Tough, you know, just keep carrying it how you are, you know, you're here for a reason and continue to be that type of guy.
Thanks, Jordan. I appreciate it. Good luck. Hopefully we'll see you around over at the complex.
Oh, yes, sir. No problem.
So some great stuff there from Jordan McGee. Always a pleasure to talk to him. Again, as we said at the outset of the show, Temple's first spring football practice is going to be a week from today. So we're recording this on Tuesday afternoon. So Tuesday, March 12th will be Temple's first spring practice. We'll be talking to Stan Drayton, wide receiver Ian Stewart, and defensive lineman Demarek Morris after that practice. They're going to be on a Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday schedule. So there's going to be media availability after those sessions. We'll get a handful of interviews with players, with Stan Drayton, each of the coordinators and the position coaches at least once. So again, stay locked in with owlscoop.com for all of your spring football coverage. Monday, March 25th is going to be Temple's Pro Day. And then Saturday, April 13th is going to be the Cherry and White Spring Showcase, in quotes, instead of the Cherry and White Spring game. You know, if you've listened to our podcast before, we'll tell you that you hope for a great weather for the Cherry and White game. It's a fun thing for the fans, fun thing for the fan base and the alums, both the football players, former football players to come back. And it's a great day overall if you're a Temple fan. But we typically try not to make too many determinations off the game because the game plans are watered down. Declan didn't get the memo on that a couple of years ago and was really...
Except for Kyle Williams.
Yep, it was really hyping up Kyle Williams. I think Kyle Williams has some ground to make up to get into that running back rotation. But again, he was a hell of a player at Harrisburg High School. So, but I think they're calling it a showcase game because, you know, it's that and nothing more. But nonetheless, coming up a little bit more than a month from now, guys, before we start getting into this women's basketball team, we'll have obviously a lot more tangible stuff to talk about when it comes to spring football, when it comes down to getting into the interviews and the little that we can see of practice. Although I believe Rich Berg was telling us that I think we are going to be able to see either one or two scrimmages in full, which will be two full scrimmages, Declan's telling me. So that'll be a plus. That'll be a good thing for us, and of course, a good thing for all of you, because we want to educate and pass along stuff to you guys in this podcast and with our coverage as much as anything. So, guys, give me a name that you think we're going to be hearing about after spring ball, and it can't be Evan Simon or one of the quarterbacks.
That's a great question. I've looked for a while now at that secondary. I think that's going to be easily one of the biggest gaps to fill. And I really like Adrian Lang, the cornerback. You know, he's going to be a freshman, is going to have a lot to prove, obviously, but I think he could be somebody that, you know, like we mentioned, or like I mentioned, excuse me, that there is a massive, massive talent gap in, you know, what has been over the past couple of years and what is now. And I think that's somebody that could really step up. I think he's somebody to look out for this spring. We'll see, though.
For me, I'm also going secondary, because I like Declan, I agree. This is an area that desperately needs help with the people that are leaving, and the people that are still here probably aren't as talented. I'm gonna say Tory Richardson. He's a guy transferred from UTEP. He's got a lot of experience. I mean, I think that's what they need right now. They need someone that's experienced, can come in and plug and play and kind of pick right up from and try and pick up the slack. So I think he's a guy that could come in and make some noise early and get people excited.
There are two names that jump out to me. Tyree Washington, one of the new running backs from junior college player from Stockton, California, from the City College of San Francisco. Just seems like they're pretty high on him. He can break tackles. He's elusive. He's got some craftiness to him. 5'10", 210 pounds. And then Malsapalu, the junior college offensive lineman, they really have lacked an interior athletic road grader type that can really just push people off the ball in the middle of the line. We've seen just how many times the pocket collapsed for EJ Warner, whoever was playing quarterback, when he was out with his concussion. So again, all these guys have to come in and prove themselves, but there'll be no shortage of names, questions, things to look at with this team in the spring because of the newness of the roster. Again, 40 plus players new to the program. And that's just now. We'll continue to emphasize that there could be and most likely will be more roster movement post-spring as the coaches evaluate where they are, some of these players evaluate where they are. We will be looking at position battles, getting as many interviews as we can, getting as many players and coaches as we can on the pod. So a lot of fun stuff to look to in the coming weeks for spring football coverage. This Temple women's basketball team, guys, they're going to host FAU on Wednesday night, tomorrow night. We're recording this again on a Tuesday afternoon on senior night. So FAU is 11-17, 6-11 in the American. So on paper, this is a game the Temple should win. Anaya Hubbard is FAU's best player, one of the better players in the league. He's a very good player, averaging almost 18 points and 5 rebounds a game, shooting 50% from the field. But I think we can say the Temple probably has the better roster here. They took care of business Sunday with an 81-66 win at ECU behind a really, really good game from Tiara East. Career highs of 28 points and 13 rebounds. She led 5 players in double figures in scoring. So again, for Temple to win the regular season title now, because they lost to Tulsa last week at home since the last time we recorded, for Temple to win the title, the regular season title, and get that top seed in the conference tournament, North Texas would have to lose to Memphis, and Tulsa would have to lose to Tulane tonight. Both those scenarios seem unlikely, but we'll see. But at the very least, Temple would have the third seed in the conference tournament and a double bye, so right to the quarterfinal round there. Guys, a couple of questions for you that are on my mind. And this first one sounds more like a kind of like a sports talk radio superstitious topic or a question that people ask when it comes to teams that are on streaks. Is there anything good that comes from Temple maybe getting a loss out of its system after that 76-67 loss to Tulsa last Wednesday that broke their winning streak. Tamira Poindexter, by the way, had 30 points in that game. Really, really good player. Arguably one of the top players, if not the maybe the best player in the conference. She was a big, big factor in that game. So they lost to a good Tulsa team. Is there anything good that comes from them getting a loss out of their system? Obviously, if they beat Tulsa, they're in the driver's seat and they're on their way most likely to having the top seed, a regular season title. So it's not everything's good, but can it all be a wake-up call, a teachable moment? Again, it's not like they lost to a bad team, but is there anything that you guys would put into that to say, okay, maybe it's a good thing that they get a loss out of their system right now before they close out the regular season and head down to Fort Worth?
I would say if you would have asked me like the day after, like they had lost, I'd say, I mean, probably like you still want to, like that game specifically, you don't want to lose. But I think after seeing how they played against ECU on Sunday, I mean, they, like the first quarter, they came out a little slow and then they completely dominated the rest of that game. Like it really, like ECU made it close a couple more times, but it just did not feel like they were in that game at all. And it felt like they were playing like hungry and angry. And I feel like that's the type of stuff you need if you want to go far in conference play. And I think that loss to Tulsa made them more frustrated than I think they've been all season. And they have tough losses to SMU and Memphis. I mean, this is a Temple team that, I mean, they played really well after losing. They always typically bounce back, but they looked different against ECU.
Declan, would you agree or disagree with that?
I'd agree. I think they needed a little more fire. Man, every team can use a little more fire. But also, when you watch that Tulsa game, they shrunk the lineup. And it seemed like they were a little more tired at the end of the game. And I think that was a big part of – it was almost like an adjustment at the ending stretch. And as bad as they played against Tulsa and they did not play well, they were in it, right? Like, it showed me that there was a team that, you know, maybe – I mean, Coach Richardson called their effort into question at the end of the game. But I just feel like – there was the sort of push that maybe they needed. And John, like Johnny said, they went out and proved that. Now they have one more game left against FAU. And John, like you mentioned, that's a game, that's a take care of business game. Get in, get out, take the win, go to Texas. But I've always been interested in the regular season title narrative. Like, who really cares? You know, I don't think that was really something that was on the forefront. I think they obviously want to be first, but as long as you're getting that double bye, it doesn't matter. And now that you have double bye and you have momentum and you saw what can happen and how to prevent it, I think it makes the team more dangerous than they were initially. Because like you mentioned, you know, now they have a little extra chip on the shoulder. And there's nothing wrong with some extra motivation.
So you guys are leaving this weekend for Fort Worth, where you're going to have coverage of the tournament for Al Scoop for the Temple News. You guys cover the team as well as anybody. Give me one thing that you've seen that gives you reason to think that Temple can win the tournament and get back to the NCAA tournament. And then give me one thing you've seen that concerns you guys enough to think that they can't win the tournament.
My first thought was defense, but that's too broad. I want to say the way that they can turn their defense into offense. So like when their offense is hitting on all cylinders, when their shots aren't falling, they still find a way to score in transition, force steals, force turnovers, and turn that into offense. They don't just get the turnovers and then like go slow, play half court offense. They know that if they're struggling, they have to run it, play in transition, and play to their strength there. So I think that's a place where if they're struggling on offense in the tournament, they can lean back on that and stay in games and find ways to win games. The one reason that they might not win the whole thing, I mean, I think it's just inconsistencies with communication. It seems like there are times, there's always one quarter that comes down to sort of hurt them and make it hard for them to pull away. And I think that happens. I mean, I've talked with Coach Richardson all season long, and the one thing that always has come up is their miscommunication on defense or their lack of communication on defense or offense as well. And I think that if they're not communicating and they're not talking, I think that, I mean, teams are going to capitalize on that. And I think that's going to hurt them.
Two similar motifs. I agree with everything Johnny said, but I think the biggest thing when you're talking about defense and offense, that only happens with effort and hustle. And I think that's their biggest strength, is that, you know, they're getting, Kyle mentioned it, I think either last week or 2 weeks ago,
They're leading in a lot of hustle stats. You know, their turnover margin is one of the best in the country. Their offensive rebound is top, I think, 10 in the country. All these stats that win teams games, they're seeming to do really well in that category. So I think that's a big thing going for them, is they show that they want to win. But I think, you know, they still struggle in the half court offense. If a team is able to slow them down, they struggle with creating shots, finding that bucket, and getting comfortable in the half court, winning by being in the half court offense. So I think that's something, if teams were to slow them down, I think that's the easiest way, is, you know, force them out of their comfort level, which is going quick and finding open shots, especially getting them late in the shot clock. But I think this team has done such a good job of finding ways to win outside of it that I would be shocked if they didn't find some level of success. But that would be the thing stopping them from getting all the way to the top, in my mind.
I think some of those half court sets is where they have, we've talked about this before. I know that every team and any team can be guilty of this, but just some of the misses that they've had around the rim that have really hurt them. I feel like you don't see them as much in transition. Granted, when you're in transition, it's a breakaway situation, but if they could eliminate just some of those misses around the rim, obviously I think they'd be better off. So you guys are going to have a good time down there. Behave yourselves on this trip, for crying out loud.
Oh, it's work trip, obviously.
Business trip. That's for the men's team. Adam Fisher's team fell 72-67 to Tulsa on Saturday. Shane DeZoni and Quante Berry missed the game. Shane DeZoni had back spasms right before the game during the senior day ceremony. So he, you know, according to Adam Fisher, came to them and said, I'm having back spasms, can't play. Quante Berry was supposed to be evaluated today, which is Tuesday, for a hand injury that he sustained in the Rice game. So we'll see what happens there when they get out to finish off the regular season. Oh, excuse me. No, they have UAB Thursday night, and then they finish out the regular season at UTSA before the conference tournament begins. As for Saturday, I'd say probably, I think, one of their more disappointing losses of the season. They came out flat. They missed 11 foul shots. They couldn't get stops. They fought back again, but they didn't need to and shouldn't have had to dig out of that kind of a hole for themselves. Hysir Miller scored 16 of his 19 points in the second half. Fans are going to, you know, point to him missing that three near the end of the game, but they're not in the game at the end without him. He needs help. I wrote in my game story over the weekend that sometimes a coach's opening statement can be really just rife with cliches, but Adams was just right down the line. Here's what happened. Kind of told you everything that you needed to hear. So again, the story with them has been the same all year. They've struggled. They had that winning streak to kind of snap them out of, obviously, a 10 game losing streak that they hadn't seen the likes of anything like that since 1976. So they had played some good basketball. Obviously, they really have to win the American Athletic Conference tournament to get into the NCAA tournament. Don't think they're going to have the pieces to do it. We'll see. Again, UAB and UTSA await them on the way out before they head down to Fort Worth. Before we get into the mailbag here to close things out, Temple's athletic department got what they are calling its largest athletics donation in the history of the program to endow the athletic director position. Thanks to Debbie and Stanley Lefkowitz, Temple's going to become the 15th FBS school with an endowed AD position and just the third group of five school to have that. So big step forward for the athletic department there. Let's get into the mailbag here. Some questions to close us out. Do one last quick scan to see if we got anything else. Oh, we got one more from Detroit Owl. We'll finish with that one. So first one here comes from John Palmieri on Twitter. John's question is the Tough Fun getting any traction? To answer your question, John, I think it's gaining traction. If you listen to Andy Carl, who heads up the Tough Fun, if you listen to him speak, you'll know that they have targeted goals and they're not close to them. And they know that they'll need to be active in retention and acquisition if fans really want the results to change from this year to next. And that's coming up very, very soon. The portal opens up soon, and they're going to need NIL to not only get players out of the portal, but just retain them. Also, I think it's important to note that NIL is not just a collective at a school. The university has a vast array of assets and vendors who partner with the university. I don't know that any of them are involved in NIL. Like Andrew Hope said to us a couple weeks ago when we had him on the Scoop, this can be a win-win for everyone when it comes to educational and leadership and financial opportunities for everyone involved. So it's a big, big thing. Obviously, we talk about it seemingly almost every week. We talked about Hysier Miller. You know, we learned through a couple of sources that we talked to over the weekend that he actually committed to SMU on his visit last year when he had dipped into the portal, and he came back to Temple for less money. You can't always count on that. You can't always count on hometown discounts. Again, I know that he has endured his fair share of criticism, but I think if you can play him a little bit or a lot more off the ball next year and bring in a point guard who can take some of the pressure off of him, he's a good player. He's a good solid player on a team. I think I've mentioned this in previous episodes. There's an expression in sports where, like, you can have a lot of Robins, but you need a Batman. This team needs a Batman. And I think with a couple of better players around him, Hysier Miller becomes even better. But you can see what he can do. I mean, he hit a couple of shots that were like in your face three pointers on Saturday. They can't afford to lose a player like that. And some of that comes with, when we talk about retention with NIL. So it's upon us again. It's upon that program again. And so we'll see. So again, I think to answer your question, John, I think they're gaining some traction, but a long way to go. And I think they've articulated their goals. And, you know, if you're a Temple fan, you hope for their sake and for the athletic department's sake that they meet those goals. Temple fan Al from our message boards has the next question. This is an interesting one. And this is a football question. If Temple beats Oklahoma, is it bigger than Temple upsetting Penn State years ago? Johnny, you're shaking your head.
Yes, because that's an impossible hypothetical, even as a hypothetical.
Never say never, Johnny. Obviously, you know, Temple's going to be a big underdog in the season opener, but let's play hypothetical. If Temple beats Oklahoma, is it a bigger upset than Temple beating Penn State to open the season back in 2015?
I mean, yeah. And there's no way that, like, I think we'd all like predicted that, like, Temple would lose to Oklahoma by like 50. The Penn State upset was like great, but this Oklahoma one, like, would be like a Rudy type, like, scenario where, like, it's impossible.
It's a different level of upset because you talk about Penn State and how big that rivalry was. And it had been how many years since Temple had beat Penn State at that point, John?
72, since the World War II era.
Wow. So, I mean, you think of it like that. And in that sense, no, right? Like, in that sense, Penn State meant a lot more than this kind of bye game. You know, it meant something to the fans, the people, and then it led obviously to how good that season was. But on the other hand, Penn State is not the national sort of brand that it was, that Oklahoma is right now. You know what I mean? And I think Oklahoma, saying you beat Oklahoma sounds a lot cooler than saying you beat Penn State. And it's nothing against Penn State. Like, Penn State is still a powerhouse, but Oklahoma is, like, you know, it's on a different almost level. So I just feel, even in its down years, Oklahoma contends at a national level in a way that Penn State doesn't really do. So I think, like, on one hand, it doesn't mean as much from a historical standpoint to beat Oklahoma than to beat Penn State. But for a state of the program type win, it would be absolutely massive to go into Oklahoma and beat the Sooners. Like, that would, it would be on another level, another stratosphere even.
Yeah, I agree. It's a bigger upset, Temple fan out, if they go down there and beat Oklahoma. I can only imagine what the point spread is going to be. The other thing too to consider, Temple was, I can't remember, I think Penn State was still favored in that game, but Temple was expected, if not expected to win that game, very much expected to be in contention. I remember talking to Dave Jones of the Harrisburg Patriot News, Penn Live. He's one of my favorite columnists in the country. He's awesome. and he would have me on a couple of times, or like just I do a Q&A with him. I think I predicted the Temple would win. I think I got pretty close to the final score. But heading into that game, you looked at those matchups, you looked at the coaching, and you could say, you know, Temple could and maybe even should win this game. This was pre-Joe Moorhead joining James Franklin's staff, but Phil Snow just coached circles around James Franklin. I mean, Temple fell behind 10-0. And Phil Snow, I remember Tyler Matakavich talking about this and saying, like, Phil Snow basically mapped out how things were going to go. He said, they're going to come out and score on us. We're going to get behind, and we're going to come back. And that's exactly what happened. Temple had the pieces to win that game. If Temple goes down to Oklahoma and wins this game, that is going to be a monumental upset. I'm not saying they're going down to play Alabama. Like Kyle's pointed out, and we'll see how Oklahoma looks after spring ball, how they'll look in August, how they're doing health-wise and all that stuff. But sure, that would be a bigger upset. For them to go on the road and win that game, that would be huge. Declan, did I see that you pulled up this story?
Yeah, I did. And it's my favorite picture, my favorite headshot of yours of all time.
God.
How I immediately knew the article. Not a bad prediction there. And, you know, I'm glad that you could still flex that all these years later. You know, really happy for you that could feed your ego a little more.
Yeah, I said 27-20, and it was 27-10.
Oh, big guy.
Right? So I was close, but I hate this headshot. You guys love this headshot.
Great.
Why is it so big on the page? It takes up my entire computer screen.
I don't work for Johnny. You might know that I don't work for Penn Live and the Patriot News. I don't handle their web development stuff. But right now, you're just getting a whole lot of John DiCarlo right there.
The second you said Penn Live, I was like, I know this. I know this in my research.
Your research. I don't thank God Kyle's not here, because this segment would just go on another 2 or 3 minutes if he was here. So, yes, I think it's a bigger upset if they beat Oklahoma. Not to take away from that Penn State win. Again, that was a huge monumental thing for the program. I was there, covered that game. You had grown men and grown women crying after the game because they were so happy. Again, it ended a 74-year drought of Temple not having beaten Penn State. So, not taking away from that, but if they go down to Oklahoma, that's a holy crap. Temple is much better than we thought with, again, 40, we keep coming back to this, 40 plus new players. The level of talent, unless they just really, really look like something else in spring ball and preseason camp, this is not as good a roster. There's no Deion Dawkins. There's no Hassan Reddick. There's no Tyler Matakevich. There's no PJ Walker. There's no Jahad Thomas. There could be players at those positions that play similar roles, but that was a really, really good roster. And I think they were just as good in that Notre Dame game against a more talented team. When you saw like Praise Martin Aguike going up against Ronnie Stanley, you saw just the defensive backs going up against a Will Fuller. And that was a good, good team. So I think the Oklahoma win, or a possible Oklahoma win. Declan, you need to grow up. You don't go to Notre Dame. Maybe you'll go there for grad school at some point, but
would not go to grad school. I wanted to make fun of you in that moment. It felt right.
Wearing those glasses, you can go to grad school. You can be like, hi, I'm Rupert Holmes. I wrote the Pina Colada song. I'm here to teach your grad.
You know what? It's hilarious every single time, you know?
And I care more about Johnny's feelings right now than I do yours, because we are trying to develop him and nurture him. He laughed, and he's a good barometer for laughs. He's a great barometer for laughs.
It's great, you know.
When Johnny laughs, the angels above us sing. They spread their wings. It's just a majestic time. So just keep that in mind. Temple Takeoff on Twitter, at Cherry and White One is the Twitter handle. Thoughts and opinions on who the starting QB should be this upcoming season. I know this sounds like a boring answer here, Temple Takeoff. We don't know who it should be yet, because we've got to see what goes on in spring ball. And in August, I could tell you who I think it will be, but I don't know who it should be yet. I'll tip this over to you guys first. What do you think? How would you answer this one?
Yeah, I actually did answer this one. If you go to the Temple News, my first edition of my series called Study Session, I think be down essentially. I think it'll be down to the two new transfer quarterbacks, Evan Simon and Clifton McDowell.
Yeah.
Unless, and this is a massive unless, in case I didn't make it clear enough, okay? Unless Tyler Douglas makes a massive step, because I do think.
Forrest Brock before him. I if there is a depth chart going into spring ball, I would think that Forrest Brock is ahead of Tyler Douglas on it. So I think even you would include Forrest Brock in it before you include Tyler Douglas.
I agree, but I just meant in the sense that I think they want Tyler Douglas to take over at some point. That would be my like guess for the future, because Forrest Brock obviously like has a ceiling and has like an eligibility ceiling as well. You know, obviously Tyler Douglas redshirted last year, didn't play. I think in an ideal world, you turn the reins over to him at some point, which is the only reason I say that. But I just think that it makes the most sense to have the two guys that have more experience on bigger stages come in and compete. But it's also, they're two very different quarterbacks with very different styles of play. Not to spoil the article, I watched a lot of film on Clifton McDowell and the film that was available on Evan Simon. And Evan Simon is more, if you think of how EJ Warner played, Evan Simon is, I guess, more comparable to that. He's got a better arm. He's a little more accurate. He's mobile-ish, but not super mobile. But Clifton McDowell is just a pure, like, dual-threat quarterback, can run the ball really well, struggles at times throwing the ball, but his offensive line in Montana was not very good either, which, you know, could translate, hey, depending on how the offensive line takes a step this year or not. I just think it'll be a really interesting battle, and I do think right now, and I think this is where you were headed, John, but I think Evan Simon is probably – the day one starter, but I do think whoever they go with is going to dictate how the offense is run, because they're just two vastly different quarterbacks.
I mean, I echo kind of the same thing that you and Declan were saying. I think if Danny Langsdorf and Sam Drayton are trying to have a relatively similar offense to how they ran it last year, the pick is Evan Simon. I mean, he resembles the way EJ played, the same type of aggressiveness, the same like sort of play style that EJ had. And I think if you're just trying to rinse and repeat and just do that again, you go with Evan Simon. But if they're looking to shake up their offense, looking to change some stuff, change some sets, Cliff McDowell, I think he's not a bad pick. I mean, I was watching some of the film with Declan when he was watching, and he carried his team to the FCS championship game. With his feet, with the way he's able to throw the ball on the run. I mean, if you're looking to spice things up, he is a good pick. But I still believe that the day one starter will be Evan Simon.
If I had to predict it right now, I would think that Evan Simon will probably start. You could see a situation where it's like a EJ Warner, Quincy Patterson type of thing, and the new lead actors in this scenario are Evan Simon playing that lead role there. Clifton McDowell, better or worse thrower than Quincy Patterson?
Oh, much better. Much, much better.
Better. I mean, strong, like Quincy has a strong arm, just wasn't accurate. How about his arm compared to Quincy Patterson's?
I would say that Clifton McDowell is as strong, if not a little stronger than Quincy Patterson, and is more accurate. Now, where he struggled though is when he was under pressure. He tended to throw a little bit off his back foot or like shuffle his feet as he was throwing it. So I think it's like a more of a fundamental type thing, but I think it's hard for me to say with the film that I watched that Quincy Patterson and Clifton McDowell are comparable, only that they're dual threats. Mm-hmm. I just think McDowell is a much better like passing quarterback than Quincy Patterson.
The only thing I was going to point back to before we handle these last couple questions here, when you were talking about Tyler Douglas and they think like in terms of longevity, they would want him to take over. I think with all due respect, that's like a pre-transfer portal and NIL way of thinking. I think it's just a year-to-year thing now, because even if Tyler Douglas plays lights out football this month and plays lights out football in August, and then they ease him in, if Evan Simon gets completely overwhelmed at Oklahoma and Clifton McDowell does too, and by week two or week three, they're they can't keep Tyler Douglas off the field, I don't think they look at him and say, okay, he's our starter for years to come. Then it becomes a retention thing. Hey, Tyler Douglas, you go out there, you throw for 3,200 yards, 25 touchdowns, 10 picks. You're fighting to keep him out of the portal. So I get what you're saying, but I think even there is going to be a year-to-year thing. But I think we're all on the same page with this, where it's Evan Simon 1 and Clifton McDowell 1A. Obviously, that position battle is going to get a ton of questions and a ton of attention, as it always does.
I get what you're saying there, too, but also, like, they brought in these veteran guys. You got to think, in a sense, the mentor. I mean, that's what they said all last spring, right, was to shape Tyler Douglas to be the guy going forward. Like,
did they ever say that? I don't think they ever said for Tyler Douglas to be the guy.
They said for EJ, which is, like, valid. But also, wouldn't you want to apply that same mindset to the freshman quarterback that also came in? You know what I mean? Like, they mentioned that Forrest Brock came in to be that sort of mentor figure.
Yeah, but again, I still go back to, yes, right now Tyler Douglas is a redshirt freshman, but he could be out the door quickly, and there could be, I'm not saying that he's going to. He hasn't done anything to warrant leaving via the transfer portal and transferring up or a lateral transfer, but that Tyler Douglas character could be anybody else. That could be someone new. I don't know that they have seen enough of Tyler Douglas to say, man, he's the guy that's going to be here, we hope, for 2 or 3 years. I mean, when I talked to Danny Langsdorf on signing day, I think he basically articulated that he's a step behind Forrest right now. It doesn't mean that he can't get ahead of them, but I don't know that they have that great feeling just yet and saying, like, wow, this guy could be the heir apparent. We're just expecting him to go here, here, and here. I just think that Tyler Douglas could be, you know, that role could be Tyler Douglas. That could be someone else. I don't know that he is firmly etched in there just yet. So I get what you're saying, but I just think it's a different conversation in 2024.
No, it definitely is. I just think also, like, they wouldn't keep him around if they didn't think he could be that in some capacity, right? Like, you wouldn't waste your time. You wouldn't waste a scholarship on him. That's all I'm trying to say. It is an outside shot, but, like, mm-hmm. I would honestly put my money on him over Forrest Brock. That's just my opinion. I'm not in the locker room, obviously, but ceiling potential level, I would put my money on him over Forrest Brock.
Yeah, I think so in terms of skill set. But again, we got to see what happens in the future. Our next question here comes from Temple Tough. Off the Hook 3 is the Twitter handle here. His question: if Temple football were to go 6-6 next season, how would they maintain momentum in the era of NIL and the transfer portal? Do you just keep putting together 40 recruit classes? I think we talked about this before. Programs that have been more successful than Temple are putting together recruiting classes of that size. So how do you maintain momentum? If they go 6-6, the momentum is, hey, we got bowl eligible in year 3. So we were playing some postseason football in December or January. I think it would be more a December bowl. The momentum's there. And again, like, in the era of NIL, the football program's got to hope that it gets more NIL help in the future. And to your second point here, your second question, do you just keep putting together 40 recruit classes? Yeah, you might have to. And that's part of the norm. Is that great for continuity? No. I think every program, or a lot of programs, are feeling that. But I think when you say, do you just keep putting together 40 recruit classes? I don't know that that's as much of a Band-Aid as you're making it out to be. Totally understand where you're coming from on that. But yeah, I think there's momentum there. And yeah, you might have to put together another 40 recruit class to do it. Final question to close us out here comes from Detroit Al. What does your crystal ball say about our basketball players hitting the portal this year? Over under at 3. So Detroit Al is setting the over under on, I'm assuming he's saying men's basketball here. The questions that we've gotten before from Detroit Al are pertaining to men's basketball. He's setting the over under on the players that hit the portal at 3. Do you take the over or under on that?
I'm taking the hard over. I'm not going to lie. I think there are going to be a lot of, well, okay, let's list them off in our head, right? So I think
Jordan you just want to go full speculation here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, isn't that what this question is?
It
or
is.
Do you have reporting?
I have probably a couple of educated guesses of guys that could leave.
Let's hear your thoughts first.
I'd be surprised if Emmanuel Okpomo doesn't move on after he graduates. Again, he was one of four players honored on senior day. Again, and Adam Fisher, I think, again, you know, I talked about how he pretty much synthesized everything in his opening statement. He talked about how and why they lost the game. Then he talked about senior day. Here are the guys that we honored and why. Steve Settle and Matteo Piccarelli have one more year left. They're grad students. They have one more year left of eligibility. Sam Hoffman is out of eligibility. I think that you could see Emmanuel Okpomo either A, leave to transfer somewhere else, or maybe just graduate and just move on to his professional working life. I think you could see Deuce Roberts leave. I think you could see Tosh Sweet leave. That puts you right at three. And then I think if you're Adam Fisher, you're obviously hoping that you hold on to Zion Stanford. You're hoping that you hold on to Jaleel White. You're hoping that you hold on to Hysier Miller, Jordan Riley. You're hoping that you hold on to, I think, Shane Dazzoni. I think they really, really like Shane. If you guys had a chance to listen to last week's podcast and the conversation with Shane, I mean, just a really, really down-to-earth, coachable kid. I know the coaches really like him and really respect him. I'd be mildly surprised. And I, you know, 2 years ago, I wouldn't have done this, but now it's just kind of, it is what it is. I would be mildly surprised if Okpomo, Tosh Tweet, and Deuce Roberts are back. That would put you at three. I don't think it's unforeseen in this day and age, like, you know, that they could lose somebody else to different opportunities. I don't know that I would go hard over, but I could maybe go over. That's my best guess at it, best educated guess at it right now.
Well, the other interesting wrinkle in all this is what's going to happen with the two-time transfer rule? Because right now it's got the TRO still in that court, which means anybody can transfer and play right away a second time. But if for whatever reason, when that TRO is up and the courts rule that, you know, you can only play after one transfer, like that's going to change some things for, you know, maybe somebody like Jordan Riley who gets an offer because he's proven that he could be a good talent. If he gets an offer, but this is going to be a second transfer, so he has to sit out a year, maybe that, you know, makes him hesitate as well. I think that situation would change my answer.
I don't think we're expecting any discussion of that over the next, or any resolution of that over the next couple of weeks, right?
No, but also, like, you know, what happens in the summertime, what happens before tip off,
how does it
affect everything, you know, once transactions go through, do they get enforced after that? I mean, it's just like, there's so much up in the air about it that it's hard to say, but I do think it's maybe five people leave in the transfer portal. So, I mean, we'll see what happens though.
The other part of it though, is the way that I read this question is hit the portal, not like leave through the portal. So like someone could like enter the portal and come back, like kind of like Kaiser did. I mean, I'm not saying that like that's a guarantee, but like I think that kind of changes my perspective on like if like the or like does it hit the over if someone enters the portal and then they decide to come back?
Again, have not talked to Hysier Miller about this. My educated guess would be that if Hysier Miller hits the portal again, I don't know that he would come back. But again, he's Philly means a lot to him, and here this is educated guessing and nothing more. I think you have a shot of retaining him, if not a pretty good shot of retaining him. But no, that's interesting. Could you have a couple of players who hit the portal but decide to stay? Great question. I don't know.
Well, I was just going to ask you, Johnny, does it change your answer that much, like with the three being over or under, if it is just like entering and coming back? Like, how does it affect what you're saying?
I agree with what John had said with the three that he had mentioned, and Deuce, Tosh, and Okpomo. I think those three, if there were three definitive, I'd say it'd be them. Then after that, you get kind of into like how much money do we have to kind of try and retain these guys? There are a lot of players that we had mentioned, like Shane Dazzoni, Jordan Riley, Jaleel White, Hysier Miller. Those are four guys that have shown talent at times. And we know how much that Temple has struggled with getting NIL money and getting, and we know how much money is out there for players. So it's tough, but I'm going to say it goes over, and I'm not going to say five. I'll say four.
That's probably a fair number. If the three players to hit the portal are Deuce Roberts, Emmanuel Okpomo, and Taj Tweet, and those are the only three players you lose, I think that's an excellent offseason for Temple. Because, and I'm going to go a step further here, I know this sounds harsh, I think those are three players that if Adam Fisher had heart-to-hearts with them and said, look, if you want X amount of minutes this, you know, next season, it's probably not going to happen here. And so I could see them, I could see those three guys hitting the portal, and then, like you guys have said, maybe a fourth. And again, this is, I hate to say new normal, it's such a cliche, but it really is. They're going to have to re-recruit all these guys. So I think saying that four, maybe even five, I don't think it's an unheard of number, but I think keeping it to three would be a very, very good offseason for them. Obviously, an even better offseason would be bringing in two, maybe even three new starters through the portal. Dylan Batie and Aiden Tobiasen are very good high school players who could make an immediate impact next year. They're also going to be true freshmen. They're young. They need some experienced players, day one starters to come in and really fill the gaps to make a discernible amount of progress from year one to three, two, year one to year two, excuse me. So, but a great question. Lots of good questions this week in the mailbag. Thank you all for sticking with us. Declan, thank you for sticking with us. You could have died on us in that wisdom teeth surgery, and you didn't. You fought through it.
Yeah, you know, I saw the light. Then I was like, who is going to look up stuff on ranker.com during the scoop?
You saw the light, and really all it was like an overhead dentist light.
Well, no, it was, I told you, it was the Northern Lights, okay? I was in the middle of them. It was pretty cool.
One final question before we close this thing out. What has your diet been like? What have you been able to eat? And did your cheeks swell up?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you can tell. It's gotten a lot better, but my left cheek was like, it was out. It was fully like, it was very bumpy. My diet has consisted mostly of tomato soup, which I put a little milk in it, cream of tomato soup, delicious. I know, first of all, you're making that face because you can eat it, but it is delicious.
Oh, I'm sure it is. No, it's a good, a cream base to it. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. There you go. A lot of mac and cheese as well. I've dipped my toe into tuna in the mac and cheese, you know, get that protein. It's delicious. A lot of oatmeal. And then my mom made lasagna last night, and oh my God, it was a godsend. So that's a lot of soft foods, a lot of pudding as well. I believe I had six puddings the day that I got my wisdom teeth out. So, you know, just keeping me going here.
That's good. That just sounds delightful.
It's not. Don't let it fool you. I miss food. Real food I had. I was like, oh my goodness. So good.
We all deal with our share of adversity.
But nothing hurt more than my dad, you know, typically on a Saturday or Sunday night after church, we get pizza and pizza rolls and all this other stuff. And nothing hurt more than going, reaching over the two nice pies sitting on the kitchen counter to microwave my tuna mac and cheese. So, you know, hopefully the end is in sight here.
This was on Saturday?
I believe so, yeah.
With your swollen mouth and your current state, did you lead your family in the Lord's Prayer at Mass Saturday night?
No, I took the virtual option. I sat at home and prayed. So I you know, I didn't think I was going to be on today. So I'm glad I was feeling well enough today to be on. So it was good.
Johnny, there's always a little dose at the end. It's like, I didn't think I was going to be on today. It's like he just wants those little virtual pats on the back. Like, I didn't think I was going to be on, man. I mean,
look.
I was going to have to see a specialist about this.
You're welcome, by the way. I don't think I'm being properly appreciated at this moment.
I love you. You know I love you.
I love you too.
There we go. Everything's okay. And Johnny, yes. We love you too. And
love
we
you guys.
Love you, well. Our listeners. We appreciate you being with us for another week. We'll have more for you next week. Maybe a virtual appearance from you guys from Fort Worth.
Probably. I would imagine, depending on what the schedule is.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. So between now and next week, Johnny and Declan will be boarding a flight with Ryan and Jason, correct, right?
Mm-hmm. And Rob.
Johnny just made the sign of a cross. Rob Cruz, one of our fantastic photographers and photo editors at the Temple News. But love you both. Have a great trip. Thank you all for listening, and we'll talk to you guys next week.